forward as a successful coach, an inspirational voice online, and a powerful example for you today. If you're stuck on the frame of how you think things should look, take Stephanie's story to heart. Redirect your focus from what you can get to how you can give. The moment you make this shift, a miracle will occur for you too. The universe greatly supports your service energy and is always opening doors to that end. Focusing on the service will keep you from judging and comparing. You'll feel proud of your commitment. The fastest way to get out of an energy of lack is to give. Each day, ask yourself, how can I serve? Asking this question puts you into alignment with the universe. I remember Dr. Wayne Dyer saying, when you ask yourself, how can I serve? The universe responds, how can I serve you? Trust that when you offer up an energy of service, the universe will send it back to you tenfold. You'll feel powerful in the presence of your service, and that power is what attracts. Want more for others. Wanting more for others puts us into an energy of abundance. Why? Because it feels good to want others to feel good. The practice of wishing for others to receive expands your own ability to receive. And this feeling of abundance will help you attract more of what you want into your life. When you genuinely want others to be abundant, the universe will respond in kind. Early in my career, I coached young women my age. Many of them were desperate to find their true loves and get engaged. They'd compare themselves to all their friends on Facebook posting pictures of engagement rings. I could relate. I was guilty of the same thing. I knew I couldn't give them spiritual principles that I wasn't applying in my own life. I had to find a solution of my own before I could confidently offer it to them. So I decided to turn the story around. Each time I saw a friend post about her engagement, I'd let myself be happy for her. After all, no amount of jealousy was going to get me closer to my fiancé. So instead, I let the vision of my friend's joy inspire me to feel excited for my own engagement. I started celebrating the relationships around me. When I saw couples holding hands on the street, I'd let their love inspire me. I consciously chose to perceive loving relationships as a part of my manifesting journey. Instead of choosing to see their love as a reminder of what I didn't have, I chose to see it as a reminder of what I was creating. When you see others who have what you want, celebrate it. Let their success mirror back to you what you're ready to receive. Wanting more for others requires that we release the block of comparison. When we compare ourselves to others, we lean into the lack mentality and the feeling that there's not enough love in the universe to support us all. Years after I cleared this block regarding relationships, I hit a similar block trying to conceive. If you're someone on the path to conception, protect your attracting power by not comparing your fertility journey to others or judging your friends who seem to have no trouble getting pregnant. I know this can sound impossible when you're in the depths of the struggle, but I promise it will lift you out of it. I tried to conceive for 3 years. And for the first 2 years, as I struggled with my emotions, I'd get annoyed when my friends would talk to me about their babies, their nursing experiences, and all that went into motherhood. I felt like an outsider, which directed my focus back to my perceived lack. My constant comparison made me feel depressed. Deep down, I knew that a baby couldn't be conceived out of the energy of neediness, and that I had to change my ways. So I decided to shift my focus off of what I didn't have and on to celebrating what my friends did have. Instead of comparing and judging, I let other women's mothering energy fill my heart. I asked them questions and spent time with their children. I stopped comparing myself to my friends who had children, and instead I started celebrating their motherhood. I'd spend time asking about their pregnancies, holding their babies, and learning their parenting tips and strategies. I celebrated motherhood alongside my friends, and their reality started to feel like my reality. Even though my baby had yet to arrive, I let myself be in the positive expectation of what was coming. The more I assumed the positive energy of motherhood, the closer my baby felt. The source of our envy is a part of us that we haven't yet developed. If someone has what you want, this doesn't imply that it's not available to you. In fact, it's the opposite. Your envy is a reflection of your deep desire. Even if your ego has convinced you that there's not enough to go around, your higher self knows the truth. Transform your jealousy into clarity. Turn it into an opportunity to clarify to the universe what you really want. I believe that the more you see others who have what you want, the closer you are to getting it. Choose to see the people who have what you want as a reflection of what's to come. See them as gentle winks from the universe revealing the future to you. Pay attention to the people who are thriving in areas you want to thrive in. Accept that their miracles are yours. The more you allow yourself to feel good about their greatness, the faster it comes into form for you. Do something, anything that brings you joy. Yes, this again. Remember, the key to manifesting is to feel good. I'll repeat it countless times throughout this book. The quickest way out of lack is to lean toward what feels good instead. Focus on your primary desire, which is to align with the joy of who you are. If you find yourself stuck in a story of lack or comparison, keep it simple. Just choose to focus on something that brings you joy. When I get caught up in a story of lack, I cook, go for a walk, exercise, anything that takes my focus off of what's not working and redirects it back onto what feels good. Your belief in lack and comparison can be very strong. It feels like it's impossible to change. But the reality is that the moment you do something, anything, to feel better, you're instantly catapulted out of the lack. The goal isn't to miraculously shift your perception, though we'll welcome this type of miracle. The goal is to think and feel your way out of lack one thought at a time. Turn on the faucet. Start to keep track of each time you successfully shift from fear back to love. As you add up the miracle moments, you build momentum behind your practice. Direct your thoughts towards what's working and thriving and away from fear, lack, and resistance. In any moment, you can practice the choose again method and reach for a better feeling emotion. Directing your focus onto what's thriving creates more of what you want and strengthens your faith in the universe. Applying the practices within the universal abundance method will elevate your attracting power. You'll transcend the energy of limitation and embody the energy of prosperity. Healing your lack mentality realigns you with joy and helps you accept the abundance of the universe. Deciding to feel good, let go, and release attachments aligns you with the flow of the universe. Saying yes to the universe is like turning on a faucet. All that you need will come to you. Focus on the process rather than the outcome. All the outcomes we desire show up when we're in the flow. Shifting from comparison to oneness, from competition to compassion, and from lack to love will bring you into flow fast. Let the universe support you. Feel confident knowing what others have is a reflection of what is on the way for you. Celebrate other people's successes generously and sincerely. The promise of healing lack. Healing your lack mentality promises many benefits. When your thoughts and energy are no longer stuck in lack, the universe can provide. Life is no longer a race from one achievement to the next. Instead, life becomes about the moment-to-moment experience of feeling good. Dr. Wayne Dyer famously said, "You don't attract what you want, you attract what you are." Don't become the lack that you so greatly want to avoid. Instead, assume the feeling of joy, abundance, and prosperity to become a super attractor. The methods in this chapter will bring you a lot of relief. Think about all the time you've spent feeling jealous, anxiously comparing, fearing lack, and future tripping. That is all behind you. Going forward, you can celebrate other people's successes, accept the greatness that comes to you, and enjoy the present moment knowing that what you want is on the way. When you kick the habit of lack and separation, you will feel free. It's empowering and exciting to know that your thoughts and feelings have the power to attract your desires. This feeling will be emphasized in Chapter 4. I'll teach you a method that will help you swiftly move from low-level thoughts and energy to a more positive state. I'll guide you to trust in the power of your thoughts and energy to help you navigate the tough moments in life. Follow my guidance, and you'll be amazed by the results. Chapter 4. Have fun along the way. One Saturday morning in June, I went to a friend's house for breakfast. It was a sunny, beautiful weekend day, and we made a delicious meal together. But while I was relaxed and enjoying myself, it was clear that she was nervous and distracted. As we sat at the table drinking coffee, I asked her what was wrong. She told me that later that morning, she was taking her 9-year-old son, Jack, to a baseball tryout. He'd find out that day whether he'd be moving up to the majors or staying in the minors. She was worried that he wasn't going to make it and that he'd be devastated. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of Jack. He was standing in the living room overhearing our conversation. I saw the fear in his eyes and I could sense his discomfort. My friend looked over at him and said, "Jack, the only thing you need to do today is have fun. Don't worry about what happens. Just have a good time." I could tell he wanted to believe that, but his nervous expression told me that his fear of not getting picked was stronger than his desire to have fun. Jack headed off to tryouts, and when he returned a few hours later, it was obvious from his body language that he had not been picked. The sad energy was palpable. Instead of trying to let it blow over, I went over to Jack. I said, "I understand you're disappointed. Tell me how you feel." I let him rant. He went on about how unfair it all was, how the boy who got moved up was smaller, younger, and not as good. Jack built up a tremendous amount of energetic momentum around the negative story. At first, the spiritual teacher in me wanted to do anything I could to relieve him of his pain and bring him back to a good mood. But Jack was really digging in. I wasn't going to get this 9-year-old boy from despair to carefree happiness all that quickly. In situations like these, we almost never leap from misery right to joy. But we can lift ourselves out of a low vibration energy bit by bit. I like to refer to Abraham Hicks's emotional guidance scale. The idea behind the emotional guidance scale is that while you can't usually go from a low vibration to a high vibration right away, you can make small moves up the scale. Attainable, better feeling thoughts and energy help you climb the scale to a joyful place. Your emotions are a direct indicator of how much you're resisting or allowing. When you're in an energy of joy, you're allowing yourself to be a super attractor. The closer you are to the emotion of joy, the more easily you attract what you want. But what do you do when you're really far from a feeling of joy? In these situations, it's not wise to try to leap up the scale as fast as possible. If you've ever tried to force yourself to do it, then you know how hard it is. In fact, trying to go from a very low vibration to a very high vibration quickly might leave you feeling worse. When you're in a negative place, high vibe thoughts won't resonate. They'll just feel false. So instead of trying to leap, we have to lovingly guide ourselves back to joy. Returning to joy is a gentle process that requires small steps up the emotional scale. The emotional scale is a list of commonly felt emotions ranging from joy, appreciation, freedom, love, and empowerment, the highest, to fear, despair, desperation, grief, and powerlessness, the lowest. The goal is to identify where you are on the emotional scale and proactively reach for better feeling thoughts that lead to better feeling emotions. Once you stabilize in a new emotion, you've moved up the scale. Then you continue the practice of reaching for a better feeling thought and moving up the scale to a higher vibration emotion. The emotions you feel become the energy you emit. Your energy is important because it's your point of attraction. So when you're low on the emotional scale, you're emitting negative energy and attracting people, situations, and experiences into your life that match that vibration. This is why we say things like, "My day went from bad to worse," and "I'm in a negative spiral." We're always attracting and manifesting, even if it's unconscious. As you lift yourself out of the low vibration state and move up the emotional scale, your point of attraction shifts with every step. When you lean toward joy in any situation, you literally change the vibrational frequency of what's happening around you. Here is the emotional scale as described by Abraham Hicks. The emotional guidance scale. 1, joy, appreciation, empowered, freedom, love. 2, passion. 3, enthusiasm, eagerness, happiness. 4, positive expectation, belief. 5, optimism. 6, hopefulness. 7, contentment. 8, boredom. 9, pessimism. 10, frustration, irritation, impatience. 11, overwhelmment, feeling overwhelmed. 12, disappointment. 13, doubt. 14, worry. 15, blame. 16, discouragement. 17, anger. 18, revenge. 19, hatred, rage. 20, jealousy. 21, insecurity, guilt, unworthiness. 22, fear, grief, desperation, despair, powerlessness. Here's how I use the emotional scale with our little baseball player, Jack. When he walked in the door, he was clearly in fear, grief, depression, despair, and powerlessness. I knew he might stay stuck there all day and possibly longer if he didn't have some guidance to get out. So I sat down with him, compassionately honored his emotions, and let him rant. I then gently guided him to reach for thoughts that lifted him up the scale just a bit. I said, "How does all of this make you feel?" He said, "I feel bad because now I'm the oldest person on my minor league team." In that moment, Jack's discomfort with being the oldest on the team moved him up the scale to insecurity, guilt, unworthiness. I said, "I understand how you feel. I imagine you're mad." He replied, "Yes, I'm really mad because it's not fair. The kid who got picked is younger and smaller than me. The coaches didn't follow the rules." Jack had moved into jealousy, then zoomed right up to hatred and rage, and even into blame. I could see a small amount of relief come over him as he went from despair to rage. It's funny to think that rage could be an improvement, but it has a more positive energy than fear, grief, desperation, despair, powerlessness. When we understand this, we can see how moving from despair to rage is progress. What he said about the coaches not following the rules told me he was moving up the scale to blame. So I coaxed that out of him a bit. I asked, "What else are you upset about?" He stabilized on blame as he complained about the coaches who didn't pick him. Then on his own, without any guidance from me, he moved into worry. He said, "I'm worried I won't get a lot of time on the field because they'll want to give the younger kids a chance to play." He shrugged and sighed. At this point, Jack was resolved to sit with his disappointment and didn't want to continue talking about the situation. But he was clearly feeling slightly better now that he'd moved out of despair. Later that day, we all went to the soccer field to watch Jack's younger brother play. I was chatting with Jack's mom at the field when I noticed Jack roaming around aimlessly. He came up to us and said, "I'm bored." I was so excited to hear this. I knew that boredom was a huge leap up the emotional scale. Leaving the field, Jack rode back with my husband, Zach, and me. During the drive, Zach got him talking about cars, a subject Jack is passionate about. They went on and on discussing everything from dream cars to various racetracks. I could hear excitement and enthusiasm in Jack's voice. Thoughts of the baseball tryout were far from reach. He'd now moved up to the energy of passion without even realizing it. Abraham Hicks say, "Distraction is the fastest way back into alignment." We naturally move up the emotional scale when we're distracted by something that makes us feel better than the negativity we previously focused on. If we're really stuck in and upset about something, it can seem hard to let anything else get our attention. But a simple distraction can be a miracle. The moment you even slightly shift your focus onto something else, you'll feel better. In the 12-step community, it's often suggested that the best way to get out of your own drama is to be of service to someone else. I've applied this practice for years. Whenever I notice myself obsessing about an issue that's upsetting, I shift my focus quickly by checking in on my friends to see how they're doing. I'll pick up the phone, call a friend, and say, "How are you? How can I support you right now?" The moment I get into the energy of service and focus on someone else is a miracle. The miracle is that I've shifted my perception and distracted myself from my own dramas. Best of all, I've helped someone else. Distraction really worked for Jack. By the time we got home, he was dancing around the house, playing on the computer, and telling jokes. He was back in joy. Even though an earlier disappointment had him really down, he was able to emotionally guide himself back up the scale and return to joy. This little man was a miracle worker. Let Jack's story inspire you. The next time you notice yourself at the bottom of the emotional scale, gently practice reaching for better feeling thoughts and emotions. Know that you can move up the scale bit by bit, step by step. And as this example demonstrates, you can, and often, will move up the scale by focusing on something other than what's upsetting you. This doesn't mean you're ignoring difficult emotions or checking out of tough situations. In fact, it's quite the opposite. By moving up the emotional scale, you can more easily attract the support, solutions, ideas, and perspective shifts you need to resolve problems and move through your feelings in a productive way. Let's look at another example. Maybe you've been killing some time on Instagram, but quickly find yourself feeling envious and dissatisfied over your perceived lack. Pretty pictures of vacation photos and designer clothes have you feeling simultaneously jealous and ashamed of your jealousy. Finally, you put down your phone because you're just too angry to keep looking. Don't be afraid of this anger. In fact, celebrate the shift. Anger is a higher vibration emotion than jealousy. Going from jealousy to anger is a clear sign you're moving up the emotional scale. Now your work is to keep climbing. Sometimes you can just let your emotions ride out and you'll naturally find your way back up the scale. Other times you may need to be more proactive in choosing a new thought and energy. If you find that you're going down the scale or you're stuck at a lower level vibration, the solution is simple. Return to the Choose Again method from Chapter 1 and add the emotional scale method from this chapter. Let's do a quick recap of the Choose Again method. 1. Notice the thought. Notice when your thoughts and energy are out of alignment with joy and ask yourself, how do I feel right now? Review the emotional scale and take note of where you're at. 2. Forgive the thought. Forgive yourself for being misaligned and celebrate your desire to shift. Thank your negative feelings and thoughts for showing you what you don't want and revealing what you do want. 3. Choose again and guide yourself up the emotional scale. Answer this question. What is the best feeling thought I can find right now? If you're really low on the scale and can't think of anything, ask the universe to guide you toward that better feeling thought. Remember, the thought can be totally unrelated to the reason for the emotional state you're in. When that thought makes you feel better, reach for another one. Gently guide yourself back up the emotional scale. Thinking about anything better than where you were will get you to where you want to be. Remember how positive it is to move to another emotion, even if that emotion doesn't seem joyful yet. Don't overthink this process. Abraham Hicks simplifies it by saying, all you have to do is figure out what you want and talk yourself into it. Keep it simple and reach for the next best thought that leads toward what you want. The process of reaching for a better feeling thought may be very foreign to you. Maybe you're like me and you've spent years in therapy digging up old fears and memories from the past. Or maybe you're someone who's tried to work out issues by feeling into your uncomfortable emotions. While I greatly believe in traditional therapeutic healing, I also know that if I begin that healing from a higher vibrational stance, I won't get caught in the stories. Once I heard Eckhart Tolle say in an interview that if you're focusing on a negative past experience, you can choose to recognize that the experience is no longer happening now. The moment you choose to focus on the safety and security of the present moment, the past can dissolve. With this process, you're honoring your negative feelings, but you aren't dwelling in them. This is an important distinction. Most of us either ignore or skim past our feelings or wallow in them. With this process, you honor your negative feelings, but choose to move to a better feeling fast. For many of us, moving up the emotional scale requires a fundamental perspective shift. I'm still exploring its effects even years into this process. It's okay if you're having a little trouble wrapping your mind around the emotional scale in the process of climbing it. Be willing to try it anyway. You're likely to feel great relief. Part of what makes the process so powerful is that you don't have to force yourself back to joy in order to reclaim your positive momentum. You just have to be honest about how you're feeling and choose the next best thought. Your willingness to feel better will be your guide out of despair and into joy. Feeling your feelings is essential to moving up the scale. Often when we're stuck in an emotion, the reason we can't get out of it is that we're unwilling to acknowledge what's really going on. The second you honor your true feelings, you experience relief and can move into a new vibrational stance. Practice this regularly. Whenever you notice you're stuck in low thoughts and energy, return to the emotional scale, choose again, and guide yourself back. Each time you choose again and reach for the best feeling thought you can find in the moment, you're gently moving up the scale and into alignment with the joyful vibrations of the universe. Find joy in any situation. Our resistance to joy blocks us from attracting whatever it is we desire. When we embody an energy of joy, we release resistance. I recognize that it can be difficult to find joy in seemingly joyless situations, but it's far more painful to live a joyless existence. So many of us inadvertently live that way. Whether by focusing on what's not working or by frequently complaining about our circumstances. We hope complaining will make us feel better or at least help us find a sympathetic ear. But when we focus on what's not working, we just get more of what's not working. One of the fastest ways to guide yourself back up the emotional scale is to do something that makes you feel good. If I've had a bad day, I'll pick out some music, grab my headphones, and go for a walk around the block or hit the gym. I've learned through experience that even if things aren't going the way I planned, I can still have fun. In fact, the more fun I have, the closer I get to attracting what I want. Sometimes we have to stop focusing so hard on our desires in order to attract them into our life. It's not that we ever lose the desire. The desire is always with us. It's just that focusing on its absence actually deflects it, whereas having fun brings us closer to receiving our desire. Taking the focus off your desire and redirecting your energy toward joy shifts you to a more positive point of attraction. Think about the last time you were obsessing about something you wanted. It probably didn't feel joyful. All your focus and attention toward what you don't have creates resistance. Release the grip of that resistance by redirecting your focus onto something fun that will distract you. Fun can come from the simplest acts. Exercise, call a friend you love, do a crossword puzzle, or spend quality time playing with your child. If an activity brings you a sense of satisfaction, contentment, warmth, excitement, or happiness, then it's fun. As soon as you lean into a fun and joyful experience, you move yourself up the emotional scale. An easy way to create more fun throughout the day is to smile at people and engage in random conversations. I'll talk to literally anyone. I'll walk down the street and tell a mother how beautiful her child is, or I'll strike up a conversation with a stranger about his or her day. These spontaneous moments of connection can bring forth a lot of joy for everyone. Maybe you're not like me, striking up conversations with random people, but you can smile at someone on your commute or offer to get your coworker a coffee. These seemingly insignificant moments of connection catapult us back into our true love nature. Embodying joy and love is what being a super attractor is all about. I want to emphasize that it's not hard to reclaim your super attractor connection. One moment of happiness is enough. Instead of seeking out these opportunities to feel good, we often stifle our full expression of joy by focusing strongly on an outcome. Fixating on a specific outcome that we think we want causes us to struggle and suffer as we attempt to force it. We don't let ourselves feel happy, satisfied, or relaxed until we can check that goal off the list. Even if we do achieve the goal, we immediately zero in on the next task to accomplish. Living from achievement to achievement is an addictive pattern that holds us back from truly enjoying the richness of life. When we make fun of priority and release outcomes, we can stop complaining and start attracting. But I see so many people get hung up on the idea that joy comes from achievement. This is backwards. The goal isn't to achieve something, but to have fun along the way to what you desire. Assuming an energy of joy is the fastest way to achieve success. For instance, if you're trying to attract a romantic partner, be sure to have fun on those dating apps or on that blind date. This is especially true even when you feel that any particular date isn't for you. There are still so many opportunities to learn something new and interesting about the other person or yourself. If you bring joy to the process, you'll maintain a positive point of attraction, which will speed up your capacity to manifest the partner you desire. Your fun energy is sexy, and it will be felt on every date, and even through those apps. There's nothing more attractive than someone who's having fun. If you want to manifest a new job, find ways to have more fun in the job you currently have. The good energy you bring to whatever work you do helps open doors for new opportunities. This might seem counterintuitive, especially if you don't like your current job. You might be thinking, how can I possibly enjoy this place? I hate my job. But finding a better one will require your attracting energy, and so you will have to shift your perspective on your current job. Can you be friendlier to coworkers? Can you bring more ideas and enthusiasm into meetings? Can you make your desk office a more high-vibe space? When you start to make these shifts, you'll find that you'll feel better about your current situation, and everyone you encounter will feel better about you. From this place of positive energy, you will attract that new job much faster. If you're out of alignment with the physical well-being you desire, make your healing process fun. I found great success healing myself when I chose to have fun cooking medicinal foods and practicing self-care. A beautiful example of this is my best friend Jenny, who's been helping her father Ray through his chemotherapy treatment. Every step of the way, Ray has maintained a positive attitude. He shows up for his treatment with enthusiasm and optimism. He cracks jokes with the nurses and keeps the mood light. And he spends time with Jenny researching healing foods that will nourish him. I know that Ray's attitude is not only making the experience easier, but also sending a message to every cell in his body by releasing any resistance to his healing. His joy clears blocks, supports his physical body and his mental state, and keeps him open to creative possibilities for healing. Make it your priority to have fun, even when things aren't working out the way you planned or when your manifestations haven't arrived yet. Trust that the more fun you have, the more you speed up the manifesting process. Having fun along the way shifts your energy to certainty. When joy becomes your default, you become certain that everything will work out, even if the end result is different from what you planned. You'll learn to rely on your own capacity to access joy rather than needing it from an outside source. No romance, amount of money, credential, or achievement can give you the sense of certainty your own joy can provide. When you practice having fun along the way, the universe supports you. The support, flow, and synchronicity you receive from the universe give you a great sense of certainty. Choosing fun will help you remember that you are being guided by an ever-present force of love. It will give you freedom to rely on the universe and trust that joy will clear the path. You may be thinking, how can I find joy when I'm really down about something? Always remember that you don't have to leap toward joy. You gently guide yourself up the emotional scale one step at a time. Abraham Hicks say, don't let any place that you are standing frighten you. Let it inform you. The energy you're in right now offers you clarity about what you truly want. Joy opens invisible doors. One of my favorite hobbies is cooking. I'm a self-taught intuitive chef. I don't use recipes and I've created my own techniques. I feel free in the kitchen and cooking has become another form of meditation for me. I've spent years documenting my meals on social media through photos and blog posts. So when Instagram stories came out, I was off to the races. Most evenings I share video tutorials of whatever I'm cooking for dinner. I call it the Gabby Cooking Show. Each recipe I share brings me happiness. I include the mantras that I listen to while I cook, and the fun I'm having comes through the phone screens of thousands of viewers throughout the world. I started the Gabby Cooking Show out of sheer enjoyment and nothing else. It was an authentic expression of my favorite hobby. Within a few months of regularly sharing, interesting things started to happen. I began receiving outreach emails from food brands that wanted to send me kitchen appliances for the Gabby Cooking Show. People started coming up to me at my events and telling me how much they loved my meal ideas. And then one night at a friend's party, something really funny occurred. Across the room, I saw a young woman walking toward me. She seemed happy to see me. I thought she must have been a reader excited to share her experience of one of my books. But to my surprise, she said, "Oh my God, you're that girl with the Gabby Cooking Show. I love it." I laughed out loud. I found it amazing that of all the things I've done in my career, I was being recognized for a little Instagram show that I set up on a whim. Today, take some time to do something that brings you joy. Find your own Gabby Cooking Show. Do something that lights you up and witness how the universe supports it. I can hear some of you complaining that you just don't have the time. First, you have to make feeling good a priority. You owe it to yourself and those around you. Second, you only need a few minutes for things like journaling, meditating, going for a walk, listening to your favorite song, or striking up a conversation with a coworker or neighbor. Give yourself at least 2 minutes of reprieve every day from the incessant fear-based belief systems that keep you in negativity. A few minutes is all it takes. Remember, the moment you lean toward joy, you are led up the emotional scale. Introducing joy to a situation changes the vibrational frequency of what's happening around you. Try this out. The next time you're annoyed in that long meeting or sucked into a gossipy conversation at brunch, crack a joke. Bring joy into the joyless environment and watch the energy change in the room. You are a shapeshifter. Think about the mornings you enter the office in a good mood. I'm sure people treat you with more kindness and higher vibes than on the days when you show up with a bad attitude. You have the power to shift the energy around you by choosing to be in joy. Even when other people don't start off in that place, you have the power to lift them up with you. Anytime you bring your high vibe energy to someone in a lower vibration, they will be elevated in your presence. Often what matters most isn't even what you say or do, but the energy you give off. Be the person who lights up a room. Carry a flashlight. Many of my students ask me how they can maintain their high vibes when the people around them are stuck in negativity. My response is, always carry a flashlight. It serves as a constant reminder of your ability to shine light even around the darkness of others. Shining your light is the best way to deal with negativity. We sometimes think that commiserating is the most effective way to help, but commiserating only makes things worse. If someone is suffering, you don't want to bring your energy down to help them feel better. Does it make you feel good to be pitied? Probably not. Being pitied usually perpetuates our discomfort and reinforces our sense of powerlessness. We think, things must really be bad if they think so too. Instead of pitying someone, turn on your inner flashlight, maintain your high vibration, and guide that person back to peace through your positive presence. Your high vibration will brighten their world. When you get aligned with the energy of joy, you become a bearer of light for everyone you meet, and you give others inspiration to shine when they're around you. Aim to be a source of light in the world simply by assuming an energy of joy. In the presence of your joy, others will recognize their own. Calibrate your energy to a positive frequency. All the greatness I've attracted into my life has come from high vibrational energy. In 2015, I declared that I was going to measure my success based on how much fun I was having. In several of my books, I've written about the power of fun and the magnetic force field of joy, and I've long said that happiness is a choice I make. But I've recently made it an even higher priority. This is when I began to really feel the fluidity of joy in my life. I accepted that joy can be a feeling I tune into all the time, not just in fleeting moments. This big shift occurred when I became devoted to my well-being and committed to the power of positive thinking, stress reduction, and releasing resistance. Living these practices wholeheartedly allowed me to recalibrate my energy. I'm no longer striving for moments of joyful relief. Now I feel the flow of joy throughout my days. The shift for me was that I decided to stop giving purpose to my pain. I honored my suffering from the past, but chose to no longer dwell in it. I decided to be new and accept joy as my birthright. This newness showed up in my work, my marriage, and my physical health. As soon as I decided to live with ease and joy, my life changed forever. In a short period of time, I felt like a new person. This is the happiest I've ever been. I share this with you because I know this miracle awaits you too. When you are guided to a book like this, it's because you have a strong desire to feel better. That desire is enough for you to experience a miraculous shift. You can decide today to recalibrate your energy and commit to love and joy. In an instant, you can choose a world beyond your fear. I know this is true because many of you have reached out and shared your experience of it with me. When you embark on a spiritual path, a shift occurs whether you're conscious of it or not. And if you stick to the path and stay committed to your practices, one day you wake up and you're new. Welcome your newness now. If you've taken the time to apply even one of the principles in this book, you are new. These methods recalibrate your energy and bring you back up the emotional scale. The simplest shift is enough to set you on a new path. Pay attention to your newness and celebrate each shift, no matter how small. Celebrate the moments when you choose to relax rather than push harder, when you forgive rather than attack, when you choose a better feeling thought and think your way out of despair. These seemingly minor moments are the miracles. Be proud of each miraculous shift. Thank you for your commitment. ride the wave of positivity. Even the slightest shift in your energy is enough to redirect your energetic flow toward joy. When you feel that shift, let it take over. Take it even further and feel it as much as possible. The moment I notice my energy inch closer to love and joy, I reach for more. I feel the good vibrations and let them move me deeply. I consciously continue reaching for more and more positive thoughts. It happens frequently when I'm driving in the countryside listening to mantra music. I often get a hit of great wonder as I pass forests and fields, listening to the sounds of the music. When I feel this feeling, I ride the momentum and keep the good vibes flowing. I start to think about how grateful I am to live in a peaceful community and how much I love that I can drive to the local farm and pick up food for the week, feeling free behind the wheel. I think about the dinner I'm going to cook later that night and how much my husband will appreciate it. I go even further and start sending love to my friends and my community and celebrating the great connections I've made. I then honor myself for committing to serving the world. I let this joy move through me. Riding this momentum is a really fun process. The next time you feel your energy begin to calibrate toward love, ride the wave of positivity and then take it even further. Let your thoughts flow with more and more joy. Reach further and further for more good feeling emotions. You can't take this practice too far. Surf the wave of positivity and don't stop. Feeling good is the goal, so when you get there, go grab even more of it. Inspire others by doing what inspires you. You may still be feeling some resistance to the idea that having fun is one of the most important things you can do. This is a normal reaction. Many new spiritual students fear that their spiritual path is selfish. They feel guilty taking time for fun and being unapologetic about their desires. But one of the greatest lessons I've learned from Abraham Hicks is that we must be selfish in our practice. Selfish here is not a negative concept. This kind of selfishness doesn't hurt anyone else, and it doesn't mean you neglect others in any way. But it requires you to put your joy first. You must make your joy your highest priority. When you're selfish about your well-being, you're actually being of high service to the world. This is because the more joy you embody, and the more you allow inspiration to move through you, the more powerfully you will serve others. We can't help or uplift anyone or anything else from a place of resistance and low vibration. The greatest gift we can give is our positive energy. So I'm encouraging you to become more selfish about how you want to feel. Trust that the happier and more inspired you are, the more you can give to your family, your friends, your coworkers, and your community. We're living in a time when we must bring more positivity and light to the world. Anyone on a spiritual path is signed up to be of service. The first service is the energy you bring. Great change in the world cannot come from our hopelessness. It must come from our inspiration and joy. When we make our joy a priority, brilliant ideas will come naturally, support will surround us, and movements will form. People who are truly happy are also truly helpful. When you know how amazing it is to live in joy, you can't help but want to spread it. As you embody this energy, you will lift the veil from a world of fear to reveal a world filled with light. This is the practice in the next chapter. In the coming pages, you will learn that there is a world beyond the fearful perceptions we've grown to rely on. There is a world of peace, happiness, freedom, and light. Get excited to lift the veil. Chapter 5. Lift the Veil. When I was a child, I was very aware of a world beyond my physical sight. I believed in angels and fairies, and I was highly intuitive. When we're very young, there is no veil between the physical world and the spiritual realm. This is why you'll often hear kids speak of angels or talk to their imaginary friends. They may even talk about past lives or intuitively predict something that they couldn't have possibly known. In this state of innocence, little ones can perceive a world beyond the limitations of the body and see with spiritual sight. As a young child, I trusted in myself and a higher power. Over time, that faith was taken from me as the fears of the world grew louder. I started to feel alone, insecure, and afraid in a world full of fear and limitation. There were many moments that separated me from the love of the universe. Witnessing my parents go through a divorce, being bullied on the playground, and sometimes getting low grades in school were among the experiences of separation that built up my worldview of fear. As we grow into adulthood, the spiritual realm becomes harder to access. We weave a veil between the universal realm of spirit and the physical world we've grown to rely on. We begin to identify with our bodies rather than our spirits. We are taught and often encouraged to make this change by our parents, teachers, and others around us. As we get older, almost everyone and everything we encounter seems to reinforce a world of separation and fear. Each fear-based thought we're exposed to strengthens our belief in the physical world and distances us from the spiritual realm. Thankfully, no matter how far I detoured into the fear of the world, I always knew there was more beyond the physical. That knowledge saved me from feeling adrift and alone. Even in my darkest hour, I believed that with a spiritual connection, anything is possible. As a spiritual student, I've made it my daily devotion to lift the veil of the physical world and remember the light of the spiritual realm. This daily devotion has given me great peace amid the tension and turmoil we all encounter. The practice of choosing to see with spiritual sight has become a habit. I use it to remember that the universe is guiding me, and I restore my thoughts back to love. Without this spiritual connection, I'd get lost in the world of fearful projections. One of the ways I've stayed committed to seeing with spiritual sight has been through writing. Over the past decade, I've written 7 books on spiritual principles. In these works, I go out of my way to translate and demystify spirituality so that it will be easy for anyone to grasp. While I believe this has been greatly helpful, as I write this book, I feel called to push the metaphysical envelope. Every word I write here reminds me of what I know to be true. Channeling the words in these books brings me so much joy because the process lifts the veil between the worldly and spiritual realms. In order for all of us to truly accept that we are super attractors, we must embrace a world beyond plain logic and reason. We must become willing to be unapologetic about what our faith in the universe means to us. I want to guide you to lift the veil between the world of perception and the world of spiritual connection. Beyond the veil of the fear-based world, there are miracles waiting for you. You haven't blocked them, you just haven't been looking for them. Lesson 91 of A Course in Miracles says, "Miracles are seen in light." The Course teaches, "The miracle is always there. Its presence is not caused by your vision. Its absence is not the result of your failure to see. It is only your awareness of miracles that is affected. You will see them in the light. You will not see them in the dark." It's time for you to see with light. As long as we remain convinced that the physical world is our only reality, miracles will remain unseen. We've been encouraged to focus on the physical world of form, which has put us into a habit of denying the light. As a result, we've blinded ourselves. All we perceive is the darkness we've created. From childhood, we've created a worldview based on fear, separation, judgment, and scarcity. It's as though we're living in a nightmare, but all we have to do is turn on the light in order to recognize it's just a bad dream. Our belief in our perception of ourselves, our physical bodies, and all the fears of the world makes it hard to believe in love. We believe we're unsafe, susceptible to disease, attack, and pain. Our faith in the body has kept us living in fear. We believe in stories of illness, trauma, deprivation, and hate. We believe in the story of separateness, thinking we are better than some people and inferior to others. These belief systems occur when we disconnect from the love of the universe. One separate thought leads to the next, and they multiply in our minds. A Course in Miracles suggests that we thought up a tiny mad idea of being separate from the universe, and this began a lifelong separation from love. The tiny mad idea is that we are separate from the love of the universe, or as the Course would say, God. When we took the tiny mad idea seriously and believed it happened, we decided that the love of the universe was not enough. We chose to believe that we could create a love based on a separate world of duality. When we chose the tiny mad idea, we turned our backs on the love of the universe. At this point, the ego convinced us that we were unsafe and therefore responsible for making up a world and thought system that would make us feel good enough. To make matters worse, we feel guilty because we have separated from our truth, which is love. We chose to believe in the identity of the separate self, which makes us believe in a world that is disconnected from love. The moment we took the tiny mad idea of separation seriously, we chose a world of fear over love. The way out of that fear is to lift the veil and see through the lens of spirit. When we do this, we will remember that we are safe, whole, and protected. When we accept that there is a world of love and support beyond our physical realm, we can see ourselves as spirits having a human experience. This spiritual perception can bring us great peace, love, and joy. This is the concept of heaven on earth, when we live in the world but think with the thoughts of heaven. When we perceive a world of separation, we unconsciously feel a sense of guilt for turning our backs on what the Course calls perfect love. Each tiny mad idea of separateness builds up a dream world disconnected from the truthful love of who we are. We become overwhelmed with self-hatred for the separated self that we've become, because on an unconscious level, our belief in separation makes us guilty, defensive, and alone. These beliefs are what make up the veil hiding us from our super-attractor truth and the love of who we are. As the Course explains, the tiny mad ideas of separation aren't the problem. Rather, the problem is the way we respond to them. When we respond to fear-based thoughts with more fear, we perpetuate the separation from love. Each day we choose to lean into tiny mad ideas of separateness with beliefs such as, I don't have enough, everyone is out to get me, I'm better than them, I am unlovable, and so on. From the moment we wake up, we're crafting a dream world of separation and distancing ourselves from our truth. The question then becomes, why don't we all just lift the veil? If on the other side of the veil are light, love, and truth, what are we waiting for? Why has it taken us so long? The answer is that we're terrified of turning on the light. Because who would we be if we weren't a body stuck in the dramas of the world we've created? We've grown to rely on the perceptions we've built up against love, and we use them to protect ourselves from disappointment and pain. If we merely lifted the veil to love and released our worldly perceptions, that pain would dissolve. Even with my faith in the spiritual realm, I am constantly challenged by my perception of my self-image, my body, and the separation from love. 1 month before I began writing this book, I hit a major low point in life. I had been sick for months with an undiagnosed stomach condition. I was in a lot of pain. I couldn't eat anything, and I was obsessed with finding solutions. I spent countless hours Googling my symptoms and diagnosing myself, which is a terrible idea that I do not recommend. I was praying and meditating, but my fear was louder than my faith, and I continued to be obsessed with my body. Finally, after months of testing, I got an answer about my condition. At first, this clarity brought me some relief, but almost immediately I began fixating on how I'd heal myself. I knew in my heart that my bodily obsession was perpetuating the problem, so I began to pray for relief. My prayers were answered over lunch with my friend and teacher, Marianne Williamson. Marianne asked me how I was doing, and I launched into a monologue about all the pain and suffering I'd been going through. I told her that I finally had a diagnosis, but I complained that there was a long road to recovery. My energy was frantic, and she could sense my fear. She looked me in the eyes and said, "You're obsessed with body identification." Marianne reminded me that I could identify with the part of me that was going through this struggle, the body, or I could identify with the part of me that wasn't going through it, the spirit. She reminded me that the body heals when we're not looking at it. Marianne's words guided me back to truth and to a lesson from the Course that says, "I am not a body, I am free." This was a tough concept to embrace when my physical symptoms were activated, but I knew that as long as I was identifying with my body, my symptoms couldn't subside. I looked more closely at how this physical condition came about. A series of loveless moments of separation had caused me to feel a lot of stress. That stress directed my focus onto the world, my body, and my false fear-based perception of myself. I forgot my true purpose, which is to be love and extend love. I took Marianne's advice and chose to identify with spirit. Living with spirit identification didn't mean I stopped taking medication or following a healing protocol, but it meant that I stopped insistently focusing on the body, which was keeping me in the dark. I prayed to see myself in the light. I meditated on the vision of lifting the veil and standing in the ever-present light of the universe. Shifting from my body identification to spirit identification gave me faith in my ability to attract good health. I followed daily devoted practices to help me lift the veil and cross the bridge from my perception of the world to a world of light. Each day, I continue to remind myself that miracles are seen in light. Each prayer brings me closer to the light. Each meditation redirects my energetic frequency toward the light, and each loving thought clears the path back to the light. I've accepted that the love within me reveals my light. I don't have to clear away the darkness. I just have to choose to see in light. I know you understand the difference between body identification and spirit identification on a soulful level, but on a worldly level, you'll resist it. The Course says, "To be told that what you do not see is there sounds like insanity. Your faith lies in the darkness, not the light." I deeply understand this existential struggle between the world of darkness and the spiritual realm of light. I still live with so much emphasis on a world that I don't want to see, a world of attack, hatred, anger, and resentment, a world of struggle, pain, disappointment, and suffering. But I've come to believe that the only way out of the world of darkness is to choose to see the light as often as possible. Seeing the light is a practice, and it requires our willingness to suspend our disbelief. We must get into the habit of seeing with light. The more we tune into the vision of light, the more the perception of darkness begins to fade away. A Course in Miracles even speaks of light episodes. Several years ago, I was sitting on a beach reading the Course. I set the book down in my lap and looked out at the ocean. As I gazed at the place where the water meets the sand, I began to see a bright rectangular frame of light in the sky. It was as if I were looking at the ocean through this white light frame. I was initially startled, but also comforted by the sight. As it dissipated, I looked back down at my book and saw this passage in the Course. "You will begin to understand it when you have seen little edges of light around the same familiar objects which you see now. That is the beginning of real vision. As we go along, you may have many light episodes." I smiled with a sense of knowing that there was indeed a world beyond my physical sight. Since that time, I've had many light episodes. I see bright sparks of light, and I see streaks of light dance through the air like tinsel. Often I see light in my meditations. When I slow down and realign with the universe, the light is revealed as a deep inner feeling. I love these light episodes because they remind me that I am not a body, I am free. These days, I look for the light wherever I go. I can't block it, but I often detour into fear and forget to look for light. The light is always there, and it's my choice to see it. I wish for you to have your own experience of the light episodes. I want you to know the true meaning of living in this world, but thinking with the thoughts of love. I want you to be able to bridge the world of perception and the world of light. And I want you to bring that light back into this world of perception so you can help to expand our limited vision, to brighten the darkness. When we live in light, we remember that we have super attractor power. We know we can connect to a presence of strength, wisdom, and peace beyond the world. Now, don't freak out. I told you this was going to push the metaphysical envelope. Right now, tap into the part of yourself that believes in the light, or even in a desire to believe. This will guide you to begin this journey of undoing the perception of darkness and remembering the light. If you're resisting anything about this chapter, just tune into the part of yourself that believes in love and stay open to a new perspective. We tend to make our spiritual practice very complicated when it's not at all. What's complicated is our resistance to it. Suspend your disbelief if only for the duration of this chapter, and let me help you remember the light. It's time to lift the veil. Follow my guidance and keep it simple. Don't judge yourself for perceiving darkness. Let's begin by releasing any self-criticism or attack. I've seen so many people judge themselves for how far they've detoured into fear and darkness. Remember, the light never left you. The world of darkness you perceive is merely a series of tiny mad ideas and loveless moments that have disconnected you from the light of who you are. Right now, accept that the darkness and discomfort have been great opportunities to get closer to spirit. Let yourself off the hook for the ways you've bought into the fear of the world. Forgive yourself for all the ways you've chosen to believe in darkness. Forgive your attack thoughts. Forgive your self-judgment. forgive your wrongdoings, and forgive yourself for fearing the light. Remember what the Course teaches. Miracles are seen in light. The moment you choose to shift your thoughts from fear to love, you will experience a miracle. Choose it now by forgiving your fearful thoughts so that you can return to spirit. Choose to see in the light. Whenever you get hooked into the perceptions of the physical world, ask yourself, do I wish to see this in the dark or do I wish to see this in the light? If you have the willingness to ask this question, then you have the willingness to choose the light. The moment you ask yourself this question, you invite a spiritual presence beyond your own to guide your thoughts back to love. The question is a prayer for help. It's a reminder that there's a world beyond your physical sight, a world beyond fear, a world beyond limitation, a world that is bright. The vision of light is waiting for you to choose it. Consciously choose to see with light all throughout the day. Make this a habit. Many miracles arise when you make this simple choice. I recently experienced a miraculous shift by choosing to see with light. One afternoon, I received an email from someone concerned about a hateful post about me on someone's Facebook page. A woman had written a long rant about how I was a fraud. You can imagine how devastating this was for me to read. What upset me most was that several people on the page chimed in with comments. People said things like, "Finally, someone is speaking up about how awful Gabby is." Typically, I don't react to hate on the internet. I've prided myself on a practice I call forgive and delete, but this post really triggered me. I spent hours stuck in the darkness of this negativity. I scrolled through other negative posts on this woman's page. I got defensive, and I let myself feel depressed about it. Later that night, while I was still feeling really down about the post, my husband called me out. Zach said, "Are you still obsessing about that?" I said, "Yeah, I can't seem to shake it." He looked at me with great compassion and said, "Stop reading her negative feed and go help the people who want to hear from you. Start with the thousands of direct messages sitting in your Instagram inbox." This was the miracle. I felt so much relief the moment he suggested that I redirect my focus off of the darkness and choose to see the light instead. So I made my husband show me where to find the direct messages on Instagram. I had no idea. I didn't know the light was there because I wasn't looking for it. I then spent the next few days responding to the most beautiful stories, testimonials, and messages from people all throughout the world. People had been sending me notes of gratitude, prayers, and miraculous stories. During those few days responding to posts, helping people recommit to their spiritual path, I felt full of light and purpose. I felt deeply connected to my community and infused with joy. I had disconnected from my perception of my body, physical self, which could be attacked. And I had reconnected to my spirit, which is a force of love in the world. I woke up on the third morning filled with love. Instead of picking up my phone or jumping out of bed, I immediately thought, pray for the people you've been connecting to. I went into deep prayer. I started to send light to my community. I prayed for them to have peace of mind, health, joy, and their own spiritual awakening. I prayed for them to remember the light. I'd never felt more joyful in my life. The hateful comments on Facebook had faded away and held no power. I truly understood that miracles are seen in light. This experience transformed me. Redirecting my focus off the negativity and onto how I could serve others was the catalyst for a great spiritual awakening. I could see clearly in the light and forgive the projections of others. Today, I can say that I'm deeply grateful for the women who were hating me on Facebook. They offered me a divine spiritual assignment and a miracle. I know they can feel my love because I have released them. I love them for showing me that light can cast out all fear. In this experience, I was able to identify my own core value. I came to realize that what I value most about myself is my ability to be a presence of love in the world. When faced with darkness, I was able to access the light by helping other people feel good. I came to see how when we're in a place of resentment or reactivity, we're merely defending against the light. The only response to fear is love.